Welcome back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. It's a great pleasure to be able to talk to you today. And we broadcast every week on the Logos Radio Network, and our podcasts are available for download from truthnews.com.au, and there are links there also to Logos Radio Network archives, where you can get the podcast of the show within a few hours, generally, of the show going to air. My website tends to lag behind. At the moment, it is, once again, very far behind. I've been somewhat busy with other work, and I haven't been able to maintain my website the way I would like, but I will be catching up with that soon. And if you habitually download our podcasts from Truth News RSS feed, you probably will have noticed there haven't been any for a while. Well, that doesn't mean I haven't been doing the show. It just means I haven't been uploading the podcast. Anyway, naughty me. I will get onto it. Meanwhile, let's continue with today's broadcast. And I would like to actually continue with the video there I was playing of an interview with Dr. Andrew Wakefield. And really important points here to make is that the essence here is about freedom. Freedom of choice, freedom to think independently of what the vested interests tell you. In other words, freedom to think differently from what your GP says, or from what your specialist says, or from what the government promotional material tells you. Freedom to look and research on your own and to come up with your own decision about whether you want to take a medicine or not. Remember, vaccines are a type of medicine. They're different to most medicines in that you take them when you're not sick. Unusual, isn't it? But then you could say, well, that's preventative medicine. You could say that. I'm not an advocate of vaccines. I would never take one. I don't need them. I believe I can maintain my health through nutrition and exercise, and that I don't need some external chemical additive to be put into my blood to enable me to deal with what nature is going to throw at me. My position is very clear. It's deep, philosophical, and I've spent my whole life coming to this point of view. But I am not about to tell people that they must not take vaccines. I am not going to say to anyone, don't take a vaccine, it's terrible. I'd say, look into it, do your research, be aware. But I'm not going to tell them what to do. On the other hand, those who promote vaccines do want to tell me what to do. And that's just unacceptable, folks. Even if I'm right, even if I'm wrong, it doesn't matter. It's unacceptable to think that they can tell me what to do because they think it's for my own good. And that's power. See, that's raw power. And it has to be confronted with a determined, resolute stance for freedom of choice. We just have to be very, very firm with it. And we desperately need more whistleblowers like Dr. Andrew Wakefield. And it's a testament to how serious the situation is, how bad it's got, how close to midnight the clock is now ticking, that there is only Dr. Wakefield at the moment. There are a lot of other doctors out there who quietly will tell you, maybe don't take the flu vaccine, maybe don't take this. They'll do it quietly because they're afraid, right? They won't say it publicly. They won't give the vaccines to their kids. But they will not challenge the prevailing view because they're afraid, ladies and gentlemen. Doctors are afraid. I mean, it's just ridiculous, isn't it? How did we fall so far? How did civilization fall so far? I find it incredible. But we've got to be heroes. As Philip Zimbardo said there in that interview I played in the last hour, we have to be heroes, and we have to train our children to be heroes. We have to endorse freedom of choice. And you know what? Sometimes freedom of choice leads to mistakes. Sometimes freedom of choice can lead to serious consequences. But you know what? It's better to take that risk than to say, I will give away my freedoms and let someone else manage everything. Because the sort of mistakes that will be made when you do that, when everyone confers their power upward to some imagined all-powerful, all-knowing, benign state, the sort of mistakes, and I use that term, you know, in inverted commas, that will be made are on a scale so much worse, so much more horrific than what you would do on your own, simply because of the power associated with it and the ability to make decisions which will affect millions of people. Now, there are many questions about the science of immunization, the whole history of that science going right back to the experiments of Jenner. And many people doubt the validity of immunization in principle. My argument is not so much that, although I do certainly accept that there are these very, very important questions and that we have not been given the full story by the government and corporate agencies who tell us about how successful vaccination has been. They haven't given us the full story. But I'm not here to say, you know, vaccination is wrong. But what I will say is that it must always be the choice of the individual, the choice of the parent, whether or not to take a medicine. We have to allow that decision-making capacity. If we take that away, it completely undermines the construct, the concept of what our society is all about, of free thinking, sentient individuals making decisions. That's the essence of what a democracy is, and it's also the essence of our economy. Once you treat people as if they were your property, you no longer have a democracy. And that's why it's so important to address this creeping totalitarianism in relation to vaccines. So let's continue now with the interview with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, and we will continue with that for a large part of the show. I do have some other stories to cover during the hour, but I do hope you find this interesting. I think it's very important.
This meningitis is being caused by the mump strain, the Urabi AM9. And so he advised the Joint Committee not to touch this vaccine. It was dangerous. They ignored his pleas and they went ahead and introduced it anyway. 4 years later, it had to be hurriedly withdrawn because it was causing precisely the complication that he had warned them of. Moreover, they were asked, David Salisbury specifically was asked to allocate funds to active surveillance of adverse events, for the government to go out there and to look, to ask doctors if they had seen cases of this meningitis. And he said no, that was denied, and they relied on passive surveillance, in other words, spontaneous reports coming in from doctors or hospitals, and that is known to pick up perhaps 1 to 2% of true adverse reactions. In other words, it was inevitably going to underestimate the true numbers of this reaction, and hence the delay of 4 years for the removal of a vaccine that should never have been licensed in the first place. And it was with that background, with that insight into the practices of the Joint Committee of Vaccination and Immunisation, that I took the stand that I did on MMR. I was deeply and justifiably concerned. So the next question is, beyond the fact that MMR vaccine is not safe and has not been adequately tested, not just my opinion, but the opinion of many, is does MMR vaccine cause autism? Now, this question has been answered not by me, but by the courts, by the vaccine courts in Italy and in the United States of America, where it appears that many children over the last 30 years have been awarded millions of dollars for the fact that they have been brain damaged by MMR vaccine and other vaccines, and that brain damage has led to autism. That is a fact. Now, it has been argued by the government that some poor judge has been forced into making this decision that on balance the vaccine caused the autism in the face and in contradiction to the evidence that is available, the scientific evidence. No, that is grossly misleading. Three of these cases at least, Poling, the Italian case, and more recently, Modabi case, have been conceded by the government experts. In other words, the government experts, the government themselves, have conceded that the vaccine caused the autism. They didn't fight the case. They conceded it, that based upon the evidence available, all of the evidence, that the MMR vaccine caused the child's autism. So this isn't some poor judge being forced into a position in the absence of the evidence or in contradiction of the evidence. This is the government's own experts conceding that the MMR vaccine caused the autism, or caused the brain damage in this case that led to the autism. And what we have are millions of dollars being paid out to these children to fund their autism treatment. So when the government says it has not settled cases for autism, please bear in mind that what they are paying for is the cost of the autism treatments. The government, if it says that, is speaking out of both sides of its mouth. So let me turn now specifically to the measles outbreak in South Wales, the outbreak that the government is alleging is my responsibility, which is clearly in the face of the evidence from Lord Howe in Parliament, and for which originally I suggested protection against measles with the single vaccines. Now, it's very important for people to bear in mind that MMR doesn't protect against measles. Measles vaccine protects against measles. The mumps and the rubella component are irrelevant. So if single vaccines were available, if the government had not withdrawn the availability of that vaccine, then there would be no outbreak of measles in Wales. There would be no discussion of measles cases and potential measles deaths. So the blame for this must lie on the shoulders of those who withdrew the option of the single vaccine from parents who were legitimately concerned about the safety of the MMR, not because of me, but what had happened because of that vaccine long before I came on the scene. But there is one problem, there is one contradiction, and that is, as Lord Howe has said in Parliament, MMR vaccine uptake is at an all-time high. So why are we now seeing measles outbreaks in highly vaccinated populations? And it will be very interesting to find out how many of those children in the current outbreak have actually been vaccinated. I suspect many, and this has been seen before. One of the problems I think we're encountering here is vaccine failure. Primary and secondary vaccine failure. Primary failure, not enough children respond by developing immunity to the vaccine in the first place, and secondary vaccine failure, those that do develop immunity, that immunity disappears very quickly over time.
We're just heading to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and you've been listening there to the voice of Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who is talking about some of the fallout from the recent measles epidemic in the UK, and his perspective on it, having authored a very important paper questioning the MMR vaccine. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. And today I'm bringing you an interview here with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, one that was done quite recently, where he is addressing some concerns about the measles epidemic, which is affecting parts of the UK at the moment, which apparently has been blamed on him. He also gets into a number of interesting historical facts about the MMR vaccine, the process by which it was licensed, and his attempts to raise awareness. And he also brings up the fact that that there was a lot of information, even before his involvement, that showed that there was a big problem here. So returning to Dr. Wakefield.
And this has been seen with mumps vaccine. The mumps vaccine now does not work. And we're seeing similar outbreaks of measles in vaccinated populations. And this is one of the long-term problems of using live viral vaccines, that over time, taking the seed stock virus and repeatedly using it and using it and using it over time, that it seems for some reason to lose its potency. And what we're seeing now, I believe, is an unintended, unexpected consequence of long-term use of these live viral vaccines, and that is vaccine failure. And that is something that is really, really concerning. It's not theoretical. It has been seen unequivocally for the mumps vaccine, and I believe we're now seeing it for measles. If that is the case, then one, blaming me for the outbreak of this measles cases in South Wales is totally inappropriate and is not addressing the core issue of what do you do about live viral vaccine failure. Because if the virus then is infecting people at an older age, then the outcome may be more serious, and there are no therapeutic interventions for protecting those people from measles. So the government has in effect put all its eggs in one basket, and now we are seeing measles come back. That is my belief. What we face unambiguously is an epidemic of autism, an environmentally driven epidemic of autism, now alarmingly affecting 1 in 31 boys in the United States of America. And I saw data from Yale just the other day from South Korea showing that 1 in 36 children in South Korea are affected by this lifelong severe neurodevelopmental disorder. There is the true epidemic. And yet, do we see attention being paid to that in anything like the same way that the media are paying attention to the measles outbreak in South Wales? No, we do not. That is the true epidemic, and that is the one that we really, really have to deal with as a matter of urgency. Now, what I would like to do, I have been, Dr. David Ellerman has said that this was my fault, and I understand this morning that he went on the news saying that the media were responsible for the latest sort of debate, the latest argument, by giving me some kind of voice. So he's able to go out there and make this very, very serious allegation against me and then deprive me of the opportunity of responding in the media. That is an extraordinary situation in what is supposedly a free country. What I'm suggesting is a formal scientific debate in public, in front of an audience that is televised. And specifically, Dr. David Salisbury, I would like to debate you, because I believe you are at the heart of this matter. I believe the decisions taken by you and by your committee, the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, lie at the heart of this matter. And there are many things that I would like to debate with you. But I'd like to debate with you specifically why you have denied repeatedly that there was any form of indemnity for the manufacturers of the Urabi-containing vaccine Pluzarix when it was originally introduced. Why you have denied that, and what I have here, Dr. Salisbury, are the unredacted minutes of the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation held on the 7th of May 1993. And here, in these minutes, it says, whilst SKB, that is Smith, Kline, Beecham, continued to sell the Urabi strain vaccine without liability. How, Dr. Salisbury, do you explain the term without liability in that context? It seems to me, and this was something that was disclosed to me, your whistleblower from the government, from your own committee, who said that a deal was done with the manufacturer to exempt them from liability for introducing a vaccine that they had concerns about because they were already having problems with it in Canada, where it was then withdrawn. I would also like to put it to you, Dr. Salisbury, I'd like to ask you why you felt it necessary to contact the General Medical Council and urge them in the strongest terms to prosecute me more vigorously, indeed to admonish them for not prosecuting me more vigorously. Do you feel that was an abuse of your governmental position, introducing inevitable bias into the General Medical Council? And since you are at the heart of this matter and have been, according to your curriculum vitae, from the very beginning, the introduction of MMR in this country, it would seem to me that you are the perfect person to debate this in public with me. And if we can exonerate MMR vaccine from causing the problems which I believe and many parents believe it's causing, then that's all well and good. But that will only be resolved in an open scientific debate. And therefore, I think that the time has come for you and I to have that discussion.
Well, we'll see where that leads. My expectation is that there probably will be no debate. The objective has always been to simply silence Andrew Wakefield and to avoid scientific scrutiny. And that is a very, very sad situation that we find ourselves in. Now, there is one final topic I want to turn to today, still in relation to vaccines, and it's one which I find particularly galling, particularly disturbing. It's about an article which was published on Civil Liberties Australia website. Civil Liberties Australia is a site which dedicates itself to protecting your rights. And I'll just read to you here from their About Us page. It says here, "We stand for people's rights and go into bat for everyone's civil liberties. We monitor police and security forces and the actions and inaction of politicians. We review proposed legislation to make it better and keep a watch on government departments and agencies. We work to keep Australia the free and open society it has traditionally been, where you can be yourself without undue interference from authority." Now, it turns out, ladies and gentlemen, that Civil Liberties Australia, in one of their official policy statements, actually proposes that vaccination should be mandatory, should be enforced. And I have the article up here, and I will be providing that on our show notes. The title of the article is "Vaccination, the Choice Made for Others." It starts off, "Civil Liberties Australia is occasionally asked to state our position on the vaccination. Like most civil liberties issues, the question comes down to balancing rights. In this case, the rights of the child, the rights of children generally, and the rights of the parent to make decisions for the child, and the rights of the state to make decisions for all children." Now, I'm just going to jump through to read some of the salient points from this article, and I'm going to give you a little bit of commentary on that as we go through. Actually, we'll save that for when we return from the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and it is a great pleasure and an honour to be able to speak to you today. And I've been putting a lot of work into this vaccination question, trying to bring some balance, you might say, into the debate. We'll be right back. Please stay with us.
By the evening, oh, what's sweet by morning, bitter by
back here with Truth News Radio. We're talking about vaccination, a very commonly heard topic on this show. It seems to highlight some of the worst problems we have in our society. It seems to be a magnet for the creeping hand of totalitarianism in our governance. And what I'm raising here now is a case where an organisation which ostensibly exists to protect people's rights, Civil Liberties Australia, has gone down the path of actually endorsing the rollback of people's rights. Yeah, they're actually, and we'll get to that soon, suggesting that people's rights should be reduced in the area of a vaccine choice. Now, continuing here from this article, which was published on their website. Vaccination is an unusual issue because the parent confronts a decision that has immediate potential impact on his or her own child, but also an equivalent potential impact on all other children the child frequently comes into contact with. Siblings, cousins, friends, playmates, preschool companions, and schoolmates. For that reason, the usual question, does freedom of choice apply, is nuanced with an overlay of what are the individual's responsibilities to other children and what is the responsibility of the state. Now let me just give you my commentary on that. They begin by stating that vaccination is a special case and cannot be handled in the same way as other topics commonly discussed by Civil Liberties Australia, due to this delicate question of individual versus collective rights. However, you know, this is actually itself a eugenicist fascist argument. The idea that that we can't allow freedoms in certain areas because they might damage the greater good, the general collective, was an argument that was used by fascists and eugenicists, who actually were the same people. Fascists and eugenicists are the same people, always have been, always will be. And the argument was made in the first half of the 20th century, all over the Western world, including Nazi Germany, but including countries like Canada and the United States and Australia, that mental patients should be prevented from reproducing. Now, in Nazi Germany, they actually did it. In Western countries, they did it to some extent. In Nazi Germany, they made it official state policy. When Hitler was elected Chancellor, one of the first things he did, incredibly, one of his first actions was to order the sterilization of inmates of mental asylums. Why? Oh, because exactly the same reason why we must not allow parents to not vaccinate their children, because it would have a damaging effect on society. If we allowed mental patients to breed, their inferior DNA would contaminate the gene pool and undermine the greater good. It's the same argument, folks. It's no different. It's a fascist argument. But here it is being presented by Civil Liberties Australia and all dollied up and painted up with lipstick on it to make it look like it is a legitimate position. Continuing now. The child has a right to health, independent of the right of a parent to adopt measures for his or her child that accord with the parent's view. Here they're invoking the rights of the child, implying that failure to vaccinate is somehow infringing those rights. But that is an incredibly bold kind of assertion to make, when in fact parents are the legal guardians of the children and have to make all the decisions. And they have to live with the consequences if they do something bad. So, you know, a parent who's concerned about vaccines is doing so because they're concerned about their child. It's not an expression of carelessness. It's not an expression of neglect or negligence. It's quite the opposite. The way in which CLA has presented that also assumes this universal, absolute, there is only one right way in relation to medicines. And again, it's a fascist position. And remember, fascism, as defined by Mussolini, was actually corporatism, the blending of government and corporations. And guess what? Vaccination programs mandated by the state are a perfect blending of corporate and government agendas. Just continuing on here with the CLA article. It says here, CLA's position allows children and their parents to make their own decisions on some types of vaccines, especially those that come later in life, such as the HPV vaccine. It also allows parents a way to opt out of new and less tested vaccines, such as seasonal influenza. Now, this is quite incredible. I mean, this is so vague, so meaningless, actually. It's just like a platitude. It's just like they're saying, well, don't worry, you know, we're going to give you a little bit of freedom here. I mean, who are they to give us anything, to concede anything? They're supposed to be an organization which is dedicated to advocating our rights. And they're saying, oh, we're going to give you a little bit of freedom here, but we're going to roll back your freedoms here. Who are they? They're not who they say they are. They appear to be acting here as agents of the government corporate duopoly. And what does less tested mean? They actually say that parents should be able to opt out of less tested vaccines. Well, who's going to be the judge of that? I mean, this is one of the main problems we've got already, is that many people are saying that vaccines are not properly tested. But when the average person says that, when the average parent says that, they're immediately labelled as some horrendous fringe problem with society that has to be stamped out. And in fact, that is the position of CLA, which we'll come to. Continuing. CLA believes the rights of all children in a community generally prevail over the rights of a local child, especially in the case of life-saving vaccinations, such as Hep B, diphtheria, measles, mumps, and whooping cough. We believe this is the case because scientific and medical evidence shows that vaccination is safe and effective, and that when a child contracts a customary childhood disease, vaccinated children resist it much better than children not vaccinated. So again, they're laying down the law. They're saying there is one truth, there is one set of facts, and they don't even have to prove it. They're just saying that's the way it is. It's pure dogma. It's also interesting to note that they're invoking the concept of the state as a kind of uber parent, as if the state were a person rather than a collection of bureaucracies. And this is a really, really common feature we've seen of the modern modern society, is that this sort of personalization of the state, as if the state is actually a person. No, the state is not a person, ladies and gentlemen. The state is just a concept, right? It's a concept. There are persons involved in it. Each is an individual with varying levels of critical thinking and scientific training. We're just going to break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio. Thank you. welcome back with Truth News. Still talking about vaccines here on the show, and I've been reading to you from an article published on Civil Liberties Australia website, which appears to exhibit a complete contradiction within that organisation, in that although they say on their About Us page that their mission statement is to protect rights, to defend rights, to advocate rights, one of their official articles, which was published quite recently, endorses the rollback of rights, the rollback of freedoms in relation to vaccines. And I'm about to read to you the clincher paragraph from that article, which makes it totally clear what their position is. Turning to the right of the state to intervene and make rules and regulations, as well as laws, on behalf of children generally, Civil Liberties Australia believes that it is the state's responsibility, beyond its clear right, to enforce vaccination of children with vaccines that are scientifically and medically proven to be sound, effective, and overwhelmingly beneficial to children and the state. So here they apparently repudiate their own mandate to limit governmental power and support individual rights. Here they are calling for the rollback of individual rights. Note the use of the word enforce. Enforce is a strong word with a wide-ranging application. And I'll just read that to you again. Turning to the right of the state to intervene and make rules and regulations, CLA believes that it is the state's responsibility to enforce vaccination of children. Now, enforce can in practice mean anything from fines to arrest to imprisonment and child removal. Returning to the article, this responsibility to act proactively on behalf of the whole community applies, CLA believes, even if there is a statistical possibility of a child being infected with a disease through the vaccination process. And there's a quote here from a man by the name of Bill Rowlings. It says, I have met and spoken at length with a now 40-year-old woman who was the one-in-a-million child who caught polio from a polio vaccination in India. She remains a vocal supporter of all children being immunised against polio because of the benefits to the other 999,999 who did not get polio. Right. Well, so what they're basically saying here is that even if a vaccine harms you, it still must be enforced. And it implies here that the state is absolved from all blame, even where harm is proven. And that is a really chilling, really disturbing thing for the CLA to be saying. I mean, they're not acknowledging responsibility here. They're not acknowledging that if the state mandates that you have to go through a procedure, which then hurts you, they're basically implying that that's totally okay, again, because of this mystical concept of the greater good. It's staggering and really scary, ladies and gentlemen, that Civil Liberties Australia has adopted the darkest, most twisted aspects of Nazi eugenics. I think it's an indication that that organisation is completely infiltrated and does not and cannot be ever relied on to support people's rights. And I think we need to confront them on it. I don't think it's acceptable to have an organisation like that functioning in our society with such a twisted set of policies, with such an Orwellian undertone. Black is white. Good is bad. Freedom is slavery. That's really what they're saying. Okay, turning now to other news. I have a number of articles in relation to Chappelle Corby, which may be of interest to our audience. Chappelle Corby, of course, the Australian woman sentenced to 20 years for importing drugs, marijuana, into Bali, which has been questioned as being implausible at the outset because people do not import marijuana into a country where it sells for one-tenth the price of the country it came from. And other overwhelming evidence that suggests that she was merely the victim of a courier operation that went wrong. And it has been proven that the drug couriers in Australia had been using people's luggage to move drugs around from city to city on domestic flights. Chappelle, of course, came to Bali via Sydney, from Brisbane to Sydney to Denpasar, and one leg of her journey was a domestic route. At the time she was arrested, there had been numerous reports of these drug operations, and some of them were confidential customs reports that had been kept from the media. There's been a campaign to try and clear her name, to get her free. And the good news is that her sentence has been reduced. I've got an article here from sydneymorningherald.com.au, and it's dated May the 15th, 2013. Indonesia's president has significantly boosted Chappelle Corby's chance of parole by apparently clearing away the biggest remaining hurdle, her immigration status. A new regulation signed on April 16 means Corby's lawyers can go ahead and lodge the convicted cannabis smuggler's parole application. After the president, Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono, granted the convicted smuggler a 5-year sentence reduction last May, Corby has now served enough of her sentence, 2/3, to be eligible for parole. But her family has not yet applied because several hurdles have remained in the way. The main concern has always been immigration, which must provide a letter to the parole board clarifying her status. Now, it says here that some of those technical bureaucratic problems have been resolved. And another interesting point to note here is that Australia has supported Corby's parole application, even to the extent of providing an unprecedented guarantee of her good behaviour if she is free and living in Bali. Now, that is quite extraordinary when you consider that she has never exhibited remorse. And that is actually causing her continued problems, and I'll get onto that in a moment. But why would the Australian government guarantee her good behaviour? It is never questioned her conviction, and she has refused to admit guilt. I really do think there is something going on behind the scenes here. It's really hard to miss it. I mean, it looks like it's been acknowledged from behind closed doors that she was stitched up. But, you know, they're doing it in such an underhanded way, aren't they? Still not admitting it, still just doing all these backdoor deals, still pretending. And it is really very, very sad, very disappointing, of course tragic, but the tragedy could have been much worse. And I do believe that Chappelle will be released sooner or later. But there is another article which has come up more recently, which does put some doubt on that. Chappelle Corby plea for early release rejected by Anti-Narcotics Agency. Chappelle Corby's bid for freedom has been dealt a blow after Indonesia's anti-narcotics agency opposed her plea for release. National Narcotics Agency official Benny Mamoto yesterday revealed he had recently written to Indonesia's Minister for Justice and Human Rights to declare the Australian drug smuggler should not be given parole. The development comes after her hopes of release were boosted in March when the Australian government took the unprecedented step of offering a guarantee to Indonesia, as I mentioned earlier. Now, who knows, this could be just a little hurdle or it could be something big. It's been a long wait for Chappelle. Clearly there's a lot of players here with different agendas, and there's probably cover-ups going on. There's probably people who are very keen to protect their own reputations or to protect information that may show that they covered things up. And that would apply both on the Indonesian side and on the Australian side. But on the other hand, there seems to be significant pressure from within those same organisations to get her released. It's quite fascinating. But I think it's that there's good and bad. Good and bad on both sides. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. That wraps up our show for the week. Truth News Radio will be back next week, and I do look forward to speaking to you then. Have a great week.